Is there anyone in your life, maybe in your past, maybe even in your present, that evokes that kind of visceral feelings of fear and intimidation? Someone that when you think about, man, it just like the pit in your stomach, you're like, I don't want to deal with this person. I don't want to see this person. I don't want to have that conversation. Is there anyone? Maybe it's not fear. Maybe it's just somebody that you have a history with, somebody who maybe did something to you, and so you have maybe a resentment. You hold a grudge, or maybe, you know, there's something happened that you never really resolved, and so it's just a little uncomfortable. And so when you think about that person, you think about seeing that person, that's the last person that you want to see on earth. I'm sure that there's somebody, or at least at some point in your life, because for most of us, you know, we have someone there that evokes that kind of feeling. Well, that, brothers and sisters, that's exactly how Jacob felt as he was making his way home. He had a fear that left him not just paralyzed. It left him feeling like he couldn't eat, he couldn't sleep. It was a dominant thing that was on his mind. It was the topic that was in his prayer. In fact, it was so disturbing for him what he was about to face when he was going to see his brother Esau that he spent the whole night, as we learned last week, wrestling with God because he was so desperate and so fearful. And he was so fearful because the last memory that Jacob had of Esau was after he had fooled him, stolen his blessing, fooled their father by disguising himself, pretending that he was Esau, stole his blessing, and then hearing that Esau, his twin brother, had vowed that the next time that he would have his brother without his father present or, you know, the passing of his parents, that he would kill his brother. And Jacob, out of all people, knew that this was not just blowing hot air. He knew his brother. He knew that he was very capable of doing this. And so for Jacob, this is what he was facing. And so when God, after 20 years, and so what did Jacob do? He ran. He ran just like me. He ran away, but he didn't stay a couple of days. He stayed away for 20 years. In fact, when he left, he thought to himself, that's it. I'm not ever coming back. He thought he had left for good. But after 20 years of recouping and kind of restoring, having a family now, being blessed, God appeared to him and told him very specifically, Jacob, it is time for you to go back home. It is time for you to face your greatest fear. It is time for you to confront Esau. So there was no getting around it. Jacob and Esau were going to meet. And as we learned last week, it was like this clash, this battle. It would be the definitive confrontation between two growing, not enemies, I guess you could say enemies, but they were competing for everything in their life. And this would be the final conflict, interaction, showdown that would define the rest of his life. That's what he was looking forward to. And what we have in Genesis chapter 33 is it gives us a confrontation or meeting that is totally unexpected. It wasn't a confrontation at all. In fact, it was actually a reunion. See, instead of being the showdown and conflict that everyone would have expected knowing their history, what Genesis gives to us is a picture of a beloved family reunion. Members who had not seen each other for a long time, beloved brothers who who are like best friends, who are seeing each other for the first time. And the moment that it captures, this picture that it captures, is a beautiful embrace of warmth and brotherly love. There was a segment on Good Morning America that aired earlier this year. Two sisters who were twins from China who were adopted, but they were adopted by two different families. The families didn't know that they were twins, and they were so young, the girls were so young, that they didn't even remember that they had a twin sister. So when they adopted, when their families, two families were came from America to adopt them, I don't know why they would allow this, but they basically separated two identical twins to be adopted. And obviously, it was a grace for them just to have a new family, but because of, you know, one of the moms did some research and they found out, she saw like old pictures, and I think through social media she realized that her daughter had a twin, had a sister. And so on Good Morning America, they orchestrated this reunion of two sisters together who are probably close to 10, maybe even a little older than 10, but who are going to see each other for the first time after all their life. They didn't know that they had a sister. And so on the show, it showed this reunion of two sisters. And right when the curtain like lifted and they saw each other, there were tears. It wasn't rehearsed. It wasn't orchestrated or anything. There were tears. And I'm telling you, in the audience and probably a lot of viewers who were watching it, there wasn't probably a dry eye in the house because it was just such an emotional reunion of meeting of these twins. Now, if you could picture that, what Genesis chapter 33 gives to us is this emotional reunion of two brothers. That's what the language gives to us. I mean, how they address each other, how they deal with it. There's no conflict at all. There's no hint of animus or history between these two brothers. It's almost like they were best friends, and they got separated for some reason, and they found each other on social media, and they're reuniting for the first time. I want you to listen to verse 4. Listen to it again through that lens. It says, "But Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. And when Esau lifted up his eyes and saw the women and children, he said, 'Who are these with you?' Jacob said, 'The children whom God has graciously given your servant.' Then the servants drew near, and they and their children, and they bowed down. Leah likewise and her children drew near and bowed down. And the last, Joseph and Rachel, drew near, and they bowed down. Esau said, 'What do you mean by all this company that I met?' Jacob answered, 'To find favor in the sight of my Lord. My Lord.' But Esau said, 'I have enough, my brothers. Keep what you have for yourself.'" Up to this point in the narrative, you would expect to see this clash, this confrontation, maybe a negotiation, maybe some sort of, "Hey, do you remember what happened? Well, yeah, I'm really sorry. Hopefully this makes up for everything that you lost and what my sin did to you." At least some sort of hint that there's something going on, but none of that. It is not rehearsed. They come upon each other, and there's no acrimony. There's no even subtle hint that there has ever been a problem in this relationship. It's a beautiful picture. So we have to ask ourselves, okay, like, what happen? Because this doesn't like normally happen. Esau came with an entourage of 400 men. Now, there's only one reason that you would come with 400 men, right? It's not because he needed conversation along the way. I mean, these 400 men are there for defense and maybe even to conquer. There's only one reason, but then There's no hint whatsoever of an attack or accusation or anything. So what happened? Well, maybe God appeared to Esau, just like he did for Laban. You remember Laban when Jacob left? And Laban was about to pursue because Jacob had ran away with his daughters and their children and all of that. Maybe God appeared to Esau along the way and he warned him not to do anything against his brother. And so, you know, Esau, even though he wasn't the sharpest tool in the shed, right? He could take a hint and he was like, you know what? I'll not do that. But you don't get any hint of that. There's no indication that God appeared to him. And there's no indication that he's doing this because of fear of God. There's genuine emotion involved. Well, maybe Jacob's plan, maybe this happened because Jacob was so slick. Maybe he won. Maybe he fooled his brother again. His brother was an emotional guy. We know that, right? So maybe him seeing all the gifts, maybe witnessing all the family members would tug at his heart. And when Jacob would come, and the smooth talker that he was, he would call him my Lord, not brother, not Esau, right? But he would call him my Lord, and he would lay it on him really thick that would melt Esau's heart, and he would just like be fooled. But it wasn't that at all. We know that it wasn't that because, number one, you know, after this conversation, what Jacob does is, well, Esau does is, you know, let's go together and meet Dad, right? Because he's really excited to see you. Like, really excited to see you. He's like, no. You know, you go on your way. And you know that this is just an excuse that Jacob is putting on here. He knows, he's just doing this to avoid his brother. And Esau probably knew this too. In fact, Esau says, okay, you don't want to go with me, just let me leave my men so that they could provide, you know, they could be sort of like this parade and protection for you. Oh, no, just go on ahead. And you know what happens? He never goes. He never shows up. He goes to a different place. He tells his brother, I'll meet you there at high noon. And then he just doesn't show up. Now, if Jacob had really fooled Esau, don't you think after maybe a day, 2 days, 3 days, a week, he would have realized, my goodness, he did it again. What do you think he would have done? He would have gone to where he was to get back at him. Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, or fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Well, he was fooled like four times. You don't think that he would have been emotional? You don't think that he would have come back with those 400 men if it was because of Jacob and that he had pulled another one over him? It wasn't because Jacob beat his brawn with his brain. So then we ask ourselves, what happened? And you know what, guys? There's a lot of speculation as to what happened. But the bottom line is this. We don't know. We don't know what happened. But here's what we do know. Jacob was about to confront a brother who was stronger than him, who he has sinned against and offended, where he deserved judgment and wrath. And Jacob was fearful, and instead of getting wrath, all he gets is brotherly love. In this broken relationship that he should have expected heartache and even more trouble, what he gets is brotherly love with no explanation. And he gets it Because God specifically sent Jacob to confront his brother so that Jacob would experience having to face the one person in the world he was deathly afraid of. The one person he was deathly afraid of. So that instead of getting justice, he would experience grace, mercy, and brotherly love. In other words, God sent Jacob to Esau so that he would experience the gospel. This broken relationship, brothers and sisters, this broken relationship allowed Jacob to experience something that gave him a unique understanding of the nature of his own personal relationship with God. Being forced to seek reconciliation and closure in a relationship, in this relationship, taught him something that he otherwise could never have known. You see, up to this point, he had experienced God. God appeared to him. God showered him with favor and grace, but he didn't know why. We don't know why. The only thing we could gather is that Jacob must have been a special person. Well, he wasn't a special person. We don't have a full understanding of why God demonstrated grace to Jacob. But here, what we have are echoes of a truth that will later be clarified when Jesus would come. That the mercy and the grace and the favor and the blessing that was lavished on Jacob was not because Jacob was deserving. He wasn't deserving. It was because God who is justice, God who is holy, God who is righteous, is also a God who is gracious, loving, and merciful. And Jacob learned this. He learned this through this one relationship that allowed him to experience on a visceral, very real level the power of the gospel. Brothers and sisters, as you go through life, you're going to go through a whole gamut of experiences in life. Various different relationships. Relationships that you're going to develop throughout your life. You're going to make some friends. You're going to experience love. You're going to make some enemies. You're going to get hurt. And as you go through life, it's going to be pretty tempting to think, you know what? Happiness in life is about finding your friends, finding the people who love you, and having them close in your life, and seeing your enemies, or identifying those who can be your enemies, or the other. They don't necessarily have to be enemies. But the people who don't benefit you and who are only going to be a liability in your life. And you're tempted to think that life is about getting as much out of the people in this arena and getting out of this arena. You do more of this and you're going to be happy. You surround yourself with these people and you're going to be happy. You're going to be blessed. And you just get away from these people. But the longer you live, the more you're going to realize that life isn't black and white like that. It's relationships are not so cut and dry. It's not really simple because sometimes the people who mean most to you are often the people who hurt you the most. Relationships are a convoluted mix of different dynamics of love, intimacy, support, encouragement, and indifference, maybe even betrayal and hurt. It's just a mix of all these different things, and you can't take a knife, a scalpel, and just kind of separate so that you can position yourself for the most blessing. It's just a mix of different emotions. It's a mix of different experiences. And that's life. Sometimes you're going to feel love from your enemies, and sometimes you're going to feel hate from your loved ones. It's just how it is in life. We were just, as a church, going through 2 Corinthians in our home groups, our small groups. And what we've been learning through this letter that Paul wrote to a church that he loved, he spent a lot of time with, but he wrote this letter, and what it shows is the relationship between Paul and the Corinthian believers were very, very complicated. He was their spiritual father. He was like their mentor. He was their discipler. He was a spiritual leader and figure, you know, for their lives. But they didn't trust him. In fact, they disrespected him oftentimes. They rejected him. And yet Paul didn't just run away. He was committed to them. So in this relationship between Paul and the Corinthians, we see this very, very complicated drama that's playing itself out. Here is a spiritual, historically important spiritual figure and a historically important congregation where it should have been just this love and fellowship and support and brotherly love. But it wasn't. It was just a web of brokenness. And if Paul's relationship with the Corinthian church could be filled with brokenness, there is not a relationship that you have, brothers and sisters, there is not a relationship that you have in life that will not go through brokenness, where you will not feel at times like, my goodness, where is this relationship going? You feel broken. And in all these relationships and all these experiences, your temptation is going to want to just move on. Just kind of say, hey, you know what? I'm not dealing with it anymore. I'm just too fearful. I'm just too frustrated. I'm going to move on. I don't want to deal with it anymore. I don't want to deal with this anymore. I don't want to see this person anymore. And you're thinking, I'll just get a new set of friends. Maybe I'll get a new family. I'll get a new job, a new environment, new neighbors. How many times have you been in a situation where you've been tempted to just say, you know what, like, California sounds pretty good. You know, we'll just get a new start. We could start with a clean slate and start over. Hit the reboot button and start anew. We don't have to deal with this anymore. Go across to the other coast and you could start anew. I mean, how many times have we been tempted to think we'll just move on? But brothers and sisters, as Christians, our obligation isn't, our option isn't to run from our broken relationships. It's to be willing to confront them. I want you to think about Jacob. Jacob went to Padan Aram thinking that because of all the brokenness that he was experiencing with his brother, that he could finally put it behind him, that he was starting anew. But even after 20 years, God specifically told him to go back. Not just to go back and live in a land. Not just to go back because that's a place where he would be blessed. God specifically told him to go back so that he would see and confront his brother Esau. And because Jacob confronted Esau, he experienced this powerful transformation of this broken relationship into brotherly love. And brothers and sisters, in the same way that Jacob was called to confront this broken relationship, as we as Christians are called to confront, if God wills, all of our relationships, to be willing and not afraid, to not run, but willing to stay in all the broken relationships of our lives. No matter how hard it is, no matter how afraid you are, it is not to run, It is to be willing to be courageous, compassionate, to deal with these broken relationships. Because here's what I want you to remember, folks. No relationship is ever beyond repair. Not because you have the ability to make it right, or that circumstances will one day just, or time will heal. You know what they say? You know, time heals. Not because of any of those factors, but because God has the power to mend any and every relationship that we ever have in life. You see, this relationship between Jacob and Esau was such a broken, complicated story. And yet what we see, what we experience in this, is such a radical, powerful transformation that happens, that it gives us hope. Because if this relationship can go from being so broken to being so good to becoming this picture, this ideal picture of brotherly love, then there's not a relationship in our lives that God cannot touch and transform, where the power of God's reconciliation, where the power of God's love and grace cannot cover and mend and heal and allow, not to just kind of get on with it, but to excel. So no matter what relationship you have in your life, I want you to remember that there's not a relationship that you have that is beyond God's reach and God's ability to heal. However, I want you to also understand that just because God has the power to change and transform any relationship in your life, it doesn't mean he will. It doesn't mean he will. Because there are times, brothers and sisters, when even as Christians, even two Christians, no matter how hard they try, no matter how much they love, no matter how much they put into it, sometimes there's still something lingering. There's still a hurt. Now, I wish I could tell you that every relationship that is riddled with confusion, miscommunication, will one day be clarified in your life. That it will all end well, you know, this side of heaven. Obviously, on the other side of heaven, it's going to be different. But this side of heaven, that one day everything is going to be good. Just think about Jacob and Esau. But it's not. Just think about Jacob and Esau. Because after this incredible moment of love and harmony and brotherly love, what happened? They separated again. And you don't think that Esau had this bad taste in his mouth when he didn't see his brother? Of course he did. It's like they experienced this reconciliation, and yet there was still something that was unsaid. You don't think that Esau didn't think to himself, why didn't I address that with him? Like, here he goes again. He's just Jacob. Jacob's doing Jacob things again. You don't think that he thought to himself, wow, like, I need to address this with him. And it was this, like, lingering thing. And that's what happens in life. The fact of the matter is, a lot of your broken relationships that have misunderstandings, hurts, and resentments because of past grudges and continued patterns and cycles of repeated offenses are not going to be cleared. You're not going to experience that closure that you yearn for. But it doesn't mean that you don't move on, that you have the right to move on. In fact, even in these relationships, God has called you to remain, to stay, and to confront them. Because every broken relationship teaches us about God and his gospel. See, it's not just the experiences of grace in relationship and love and support that teach us about God and his love for us, but it's also and especially the broken relationships. Because nothing like being in a relationship where somebody has hurt you and where you have to find strength somewhere to have the grace to forgive, to absolve, where you feel like a part of you is dying, that it gives you a peek to what it cost to love you. See, it's not until you get into a relationship where you feel like, man, it was my bad, and you do the best that you can to make amends, to bring your sacrifices, to bring your sheep and your goat and all the things to repay all of the damage that you've done in that relationship, where in your mind you've not only come and met expectations, but you've exceeded expectations so that any person who is reasonable would come back and would say, you know what, it's all good. It's all right. Let's move on. We'll move forward. But until you get into a position where you feel so bad and you've done everything, and that person says, you know what, like, I can't get over it. Forget it. Or they say that, and there's something different about that relationship where it makes you realize that, maybe, man, like, forgiveness and grace, like, it's not just a given. Like, it's really hard. Where you start coming to understand, man, like, that grace and forgiveness that I've gotten from God, that's really something. See, it's not until you get into complicated relationships where it just, it's so hard because it reveals so much of your dysfunctions and your brokenness. Did you come to realize, my goodness, like the love and relationship that I have with God? That's really something. See, folks, if you don't stay in the relationships that are so hard in your life, then you will always handicap yourself to understand aspects of God's love in the gospel. It is always going to remain dark to you. You're going to know it intellectually. You're going to know it theologically. But you're not going to know it in your heart. Because until you go through those kinds of experiences, you will never come to fully accept and understand and be filled up with the fullness of what you have been given in the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that, brothers and sisters, is why it is so important for us in our relationships not to run, not to move on and say, that's an old chapter of my life that I've closed and I'm moving on to a new chapter. But to be willing, and I'm not saying that it's always, you have to always pursue it or it has to always be number one. Or before you die, you have to deal with every relationship that is, you know, somehow complicated or you haven't felt closure with. I'm not saying that. But when you know that God has brought somebody or is not allowing you to move on from that relationship, that you, with all of your heart, with all of your energy, pursue. No matter how hard it is, no matter how complicated it is. Because there's something about God that God wants you to learn in that relationship. And that's why he wants you to stay. The more you grow committed to the broken relationships in your life, the more you will grow with identifying the truth of the gospel. One final thought before I close this time. You guys realize that one day, after everything's said and done, you guys realize that one day we're all gonna meet God? I mean, we all know God, and God always, you know, he's always around us. He's everywhere. He's omnipresent. But do you realize that one day, when it's all said and done, you and I are all going to stand before the judgment seat of God? And do you know what that means? God is not like a grandfather in heaven. God is God. And more than that feeling that I had when I was a kid of my father coming home and having to face what he was going to say, what he was going to do, that caused so much fear and trepidation. One day, we are all going to stand before God, who has seen everything, who has known everything. He has known every aspect of who we are. Every word that has come out of our mouth. Every attitude behind every veiled word. Every intention that no one has known, and something that you won't even like acknowledge to yourself. He's seen it all. But when we get to heaven, we don't have to worry. Because he's not going to come with his 400,000 angels. It is going to be such a radical change of what we should expect. From this broken relationship, broken because of our part, to brotherly love on God's part. You don't have to fear it. It is something we could look forward to. And you know why we look forward to it? Because Jesus, the night he was betrayed in the Garden of Gethsemane, the Gospels tell us that he was so troubled in spirit. Now think about this. He was competent. He was confident. He's powerful. This is Jesus. He was so physically, psychologically troubled that angels had to come to attend to him. That's how troubled he was. He was so troubled that he was sweating blood. And you know why he was troubled? It was not because he was about to face the Roman guards. It was not because he was about to face the religious leaders. He was about to face the wrath of his Father. A wrath that he didn't deserve. A wrath that we deserved. And because he took that wrath, we don't have to look forward to it. We don't have to be afraid of it. We could look forward to a time where God, he won't even flinch. He will act like we've never done anything, like we've always done right, because of what Jesus faced. Because Jesus faced it for us, guys, you don't ever have to fear anyone or anything ever again in your life. No fear. Because Jesus faced it, he absorbed it, he took it for you. Does that change anything? Of course it does. It changes everything. Let's pray.